9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring today. Robert Half is here to help. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Hi, this is Jason Gay, coming to you from an undisclosed location, on the road at the moment, but coming up on the free-for-all, my conversation with basketball writer extraordinaire Chris Herring of the Wall Street Journal about the state of the game and the state of those Knicks. Coming up, free-for-all.
You're listening to Free-for-All from the Wall Street Journal.
Hi, this is Jason. You are listening to the free-for-all. Jim Cheruzmi, my loyal colleague, is actually working for a living right now, so I am one-on-one with our guest today, someone I'm really excited to have on the show. And also, let's face it, you know, the guy's been on every podcast there is at this point. I feel a little hurt that he hasn't been on mine, but he's a true star of the basketball beat. Chris Herring is here on the free-for-all. Chris, how are you?
I'm great, Jason. How are you?
Never been better, and thrilled that you're here. I want to talk a little bit about basketball, of course, but before we get there, I want to hear a little bit about how you got to it, because, you know, some people might be familiar with your backstory at the Journal, but not everyone. But before you cover the Knicks, you cover the Jets. And before you cover the Jets, you cover the town. What was your first job at the Wall Street Journal?
I was a terrified intern at the Journal. I think I got here in 2009, straight out of school. And I remember...
And this is the University of Michigan?
University of Michigan.
Is that a good school?
It's a very good school.
Is it as good as the University of Wisconsin? Because that's where
better.
I went.
Oh. It's way better.
Oh, that's not what I've heard.
But, yeah, depending on who you talk to, you'll get different responses on that, I'm sure. But, I didn't go to journalism school there. We didn't have one.
Yeah,
so maybe Wisconsin is better for that reason.
No, I didn't go to journalism school either.
Okay. So then, no, Michigan's still better. Michigan, and I remember being on the phone thrilled that I got an internship here. I think they pretty much admitted to me I got the last one of like 18 that they give out worldwide or something like that. And but I was excited, and, you know, I was excited to have this first conversation with the person who made the decision to hire me and give me the last internship. I talked to her. Her name's Jennifer Forsyth, and she's the law bureau chief at the time. And so I get to cover law, and I'm like, I don't know the first thing about law. I'm not getting ready to go to law school. So it seems random, but I can't complain because I got the internship.
I would rather do the and order. Like, the law I would not be able to handle.
Law and order. I could have brushed up on that pretty quickly with Netflix or whatever else. But I ask her, you know, I'm getting ready to ask her what I should expect, and you know, I ask her, how many of the people in your reporting group that work under you have law degrees? Yeah. And I'm thinking, you know, reporters don't get law degrees. No. They just get degrees in whatever, maybe journalism. She said, it's about half, maybe two-thirds. I said, what? Yeah. And I'm like, then this is the group I get thrown into as an intern that doesn't know anything. And so she was pretty no-nonsense, but she was really fun. And
what was the first assignment where they sent you out on your own and said, come back with something?
She told me to go cover, there was a flight where one of the pilots on the flight died mid-flight, I think from Brussels to Newark.
Yeah.
And she said, the flight's about to land, go out there and go get response from people on the plane. Mm-hmm. And I said,
it like JFK?
It was flying in to Newark from Brussels. Yeah. And so I said, okay, how long do you think I have? Yeah. She said, it's landing now. And I was like, I have to get to Newark from Midtown? I was like, okay. So I'm running over there thinking like, man, I hope I don't blow my first shot here. Yeah. And I got there and, you know, it was a bizarre story. But I remember that was my first assignment. I actually had to go out. And then I remember a few months later, I covered a plane hitting a helicopter that killed a couple Italian
right
tourists.
Right over here in on the Hudson.
Yeah, and I remember that ended up being like front page news, essentially, that, you know, that I got to cover and keep covering because of that. And so I know that impressed some people. But I had a lot of stuff where I just made a point to be there or to make myself available. A lot of interns hated working on weekends. I always put my hand up to do it because it either looked good that you were eager to come in, or, you know, if you actually did get a story like that one, you get to work on it long term and you get to work with some of the higher up reporters at the paper. So I did that. It was fun, but it had nothing to do with sports at all.
And when sports came up, was it something that you were interested in doing, or did the paper come to you and say, we're interested in bringing you into the sports beat?
It was a little bit of both. I think, you know, our boss, Sam, had kind of had his eye on me and had talked to me before. I think he knew that I had a sports background. When I was at Michigan, I wrote for the sports section and edited for the sports section.
The Michigan Daily.
Yeah, and then I also moved over to the news side there, just so I would be able to be better versed and, you know, in case I needed to write a news story, I'd know how to do it. So I did a little bit of both, but I mostly did news in college. I had some sports background. I had a couple sports internships during college. Mm-hmm. And so Sam, I think, knew that. And they kind of, I've always used this phrase, they kind of orchestrated a trade between the news and the sports section, and they moved me from news to sports.
Was it draft picks, or were you actually traded for another?
If it was Knicks, you know they gave away draft picks to get me. But it was interesting because it was kind of already figured out. Yeah. I didn't have a no-trade clause here. Like, they pretty much said, we're going to do this unless you have some huge qualm with it. And so I moved over to sports, and with the understanding that I'd be covering the Jets.
And so you go to the Jets, and forgive me for not remembering exactly, but where in sort of the cycle of the Rex Ryan era do you land? Is it, have they done both of the AFC championship runs at this point? So you're kind of starting at the beginning of the decline.
Beginning of the end. I mean, I get there in the middle of the lockout.
Okay.
And so I'm totally lost and have, like, no story ideas for the section. I feel like I'm not carrying my weight. Then I get to, you know, the actual season, and they're a disaster from beginning to end pretty much with that team. And Mark Sanchez was horrible for most of the part of the team that I covered.
Were they, I mean, as a subject, as people to talk to, I mean, I look at Rex and I say, you know, it's hard to think of someone more media friendly than him. But was on the day to day, was it, you know, easy to deal with, or was it harder?
It was weird. It was just like a really strange team. I remember Santonio Holmes was one of the rudest athletes I've ever covered. And he had Bart Scott. I remember asking him a question, and he would always try to, like, outsmart you or feel like you were trying to pull one on him. I was like, no, I'm actually just asking, like, what, you know, like, what scheme you guys were running. Like, I'm not, you know, I've always been focused mostly on strategy, so I couldn't understand that. But
in fairness, these guys who are coming from, you know, who are playing for New York teams, and now you have a lot of experience in this world, I mean, it's not wrong to say that things that they say, which might be, you know, mildly taken out of context or fully taken out of context, can become huge stories that they have to contend with. That is a environment that not many athletes in America have to deal with.
Even this week, even with Carmelo Anthony.
Sure, I mean,
literally having an interaction with a fan that
was
maybe not the most friendly, but also not the most hostile either.
Right.
And all of a sudden it prompts an apology, and then he comes out and says that it was an apology that he didn't really come up with himself. So it's a bizarre place where stuff here makes news, where in other places it might not, or there just might not be the pressure of, you know, of, I don't know, the hostility from the fan base when the team isn't playing well is probably different than it is in some cities. It's a bizarre sort of thing that it's easy to understand when you're here, but when you're not, it just looks foreign from the outside.
I want to get to the Knicks and basketball in general, but just to go back to the football environment, I'm curious about, you know, we live in a world now where the NFL is presumed to dominate the world. It's the most popular entertainment product in this country, at least. The ratings are spectacular. And virtually everyone who sort of covers the NFL almost becomes sort of a weird celebrity unto themselves because it's such a popular thing. Did the game have a new appeal to you? Did you understand it in a way that you didn't when you were simply a fan or a consumer of it? Did you get a new appreciation for what football was?
No. So here's the thing. I thought I did. I thought I loved it. But I think what it really was is that I started covering sports during a lockout. Okay. So I was excited to have something to write about, to have something to go to. And the truth is, I got there. I understand football fine. My favorite sport is probably college football as a Michigan fan.
Yeah. Do they have a good football team? Do they have a football team?
They had the roughest era of Michigan football, period, while I was a student there.
Yeah. Wisconsin goes to a bowl game every year.
Yeah. Well,
do you
Wisconsin,
guys go to bowl games?
We're starting to get back to that point where we get to them. But we made one Rose Bowl while I was in school. Uh-huh. And I think they missed a bowl game once or twice while I was there. They made it to the Sugar Bowl right as I was leaving, or either right after I finished or right as I was leaving. But, yeah, rough era. But the truth is, football, I understand it fine. But what I guess I didn't understand, I was a kid that went to church every Sunday, you know, as a child. And never really watched the NFL a ton as a kid.
Yeah.
And what blows me away and blew me away at the time is just how, and I guess some of it's the media, some of it is the fan base, and whether you want to say it's smart fans or fans that don't really care about the context, everything gets blamed, or every quarterback gets praised for the success or blamed for the failure. Yeah. And it's just, you know, covering the Jets, I just kind of felt like no matter what I wrote, fans, I wrote a lot of the same stuff the same way I write about the Knicks now, where it's very analytical, looking at numbers, kind of creating narratives that fit within the stats or what people are telling you in terms of quotes. But it didn't matter. Like, people, no matter what I wrote,
like, Sanchez is a bomb.
I could be writing about the defense, and people would say it doesn't matter unless Sanchez is better. And it's just like, okay, so that it felt like that a lot of the time. And the problem with football as compared to basketball, and why I prefer basketball over football and writing about it, is the narratives can change from night to night because basketball is so frequent.
Yeah.
Football, you have to wait an entire week, and there are certain people or positions that you almost can't write about because they're not glamorous enough.
Sure.
Offensive linemen are hugely important to everything, but you can't really write about an offensive line scheme and interest the average fan in that, and people are only going to care about the quarterback.
When you moved over to basketball, so this is your third season with the Knicks?
This is season four.
Season four. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. You've seen sort of this mini opera in the time that you've covered the Knicks, because I believe that first season was a 50-win season, was it not?
54.
54-win season, the best of the Carmelo Anthony era. Then the season after that is
37. Missed the playoffs by one game.
Last year basically doesn't exist.
17.
Did it end up being the worst in franchise history?
Yeah, by far. Yeah.
And then this year, you know, it was a very upbeat season for quite a few months, and then the wheels have come off rapidly. But just to sort of backtrack to what you were talking about with football and how you were writing a similar kind of story. I mean, the thing that you have done, not to put words in your mouth, but you have been one of the reporters out there covering this sport who has brought a new approach to the game and a new approach to the way the game is covered by, you know, both looking at the numbers and tendencies and basically putting sort of a new set of eyes on the game. This is true. You're one of several people out there who are doing this, and we all know who they are, and they all have their own audiences. But does it feel like, I don't know, like, does it feel like an exciting thing to be around? I mean, I know every Knicks game isn't exciting, but, like, you're in the sport. You're looking at it in a new way. You have a very loyal audience of people who are coming to you because they know you're always going to give them something different. That must be a cool thing.
It is, and I was having a conversation with someone about this the other day. It is, and it at the same time, you can't – maybe it's just my mindset, but I think other people are probably starting to take it as well. It's not the most comfortable, stable thing just yet, because it's still, while it's still a somewhat new idea in terms of analytics and numbers and, you know, scouting out people's tendencies and being able to show how they are relevant to a team setting, I think so many people now are starting to understand how that works better and are starting to figure out how to study those things for themselves, that a couple of years from now, I think a lot of people are going to be able to do that, and it's not going to be special anymore.
Sure. I mean, probably in the same way where baseball was, 12, 15 years ago, when you were writing about analytics, that was very, very revolutionary.
Right.
Now, we've all kind of, I don't know if we've all accepted it, but there certainly is a higher proportion of people who are adhering to new standards. With basketball, you will go to games, but then you will, the next day, sit with tape and watch that game. And how long will that take you to break down and watch a full game if you're going to do it?
Maybe. I mean, I can skip through stuff. So
right,
maybe
you're not watching the commercials.
Yeah, maybe. Well, I mean, sometimes the commercials are funny to watch, especially I get a kick out of them during the Super Bowl. But they're, sometimes when you're seeing the same ones over again, you want to skip through. But hour and a half.
Oh, okay. So not horrible.
No,
I just
it's not
imagine
bad.
You there 4 hours going through.
And
a
at this
Nets
point,
jazz game.
I mean, the other thing too is that you can kind of skip through portions if you're looking for one particular thing. I mean, if the Knicks are getting blasted, there's really no reason to watch the fourth
when
quarter.
When you are at a game, what do you watch?
You know, if I know I'm going to be writing about something, take a Aflalo, for example, a guy who has scoring talent that most of the guys on the team don't have, but also, you know, and looking at even 3-4 weeks of the guy was like so wildly inconsistent. And I just was trying to figure out why is that the case. And so I want to watch for him. I want to figure out why he's inconsistent. When he has good games, what are the common themes that you're seeing? When he's having bad games, what's happening? And so looking at the way he defends, and, you know, he doesn't seem like a slow guy. So
will
why
you
does he
watch
get beat
a guy
so
in ISO basically for, you know, an entire quarter or whatever?
Well, that was
there.
One of the great things about, and I don't use it as much now because they've kind of closed the subscription off to a lot of us. But Synergy Sports was great because you could just watch the same movement thousands of times, really, if you want to. You could watch Aaron Aflalo has 300 ISOs. You can go through and watch every single one of them and watch them one behind the other and kind of see how they differ and watch them by date, watch them by opponent.
For people who don't know what that is, what exactly is that?
So Synergy Sports is a website that basically they have people that will splice and cut specific movements or like we were talking about themes. So if you wanted to watch every single isolation that Carmelo has had this season, where he's going one-on-one against someone, you could watch that. If you want to watch every
post-up
that he's
done. Do you, like, type
it
into
a
search and say, like, okay, I want, like, you know, watch Carmelo Anthony one-on-one?
They have their site set up to where they basically will give you, like, a player page, and you can watch, you know, they will label, like, how he performs in pick-and-roll situations, how he performs in post-ups, isolations, and then if you want to look at one specific thing, you can do that. If you want to look at how he passes the ball when he's on in the left post, you know, and he's got his back to the basket and hitting someone for a pass, you could do that.
So. And by the way, isn't this what, you know, coaches and players are doing as well? They're also studying this kind of film and tendencies and getting a sense of what people can and cannot do?
Absolutely. It's the same thing. So it's, I mean, it's funny because you have Oscar Robertson saying, well, you know, if in my day, you know, we just would have guarded Steph more closely. Defenses aren't thinking and they're not good now.
Right.
I mean, they're way more sophisticated than what we had back in the day.
Sure.
Even if you feel like people could defend better, it's not because they don't have the data to make better decisions defensively.
Well, that's sort of what the beauty of the analytics era is sort of taking what were all these presuppositions about tendencies and so on and actually quantifying
are they
them.
True?
It's like, yeah. He actually does go to his left 85% of the time.
Right.
We'll be back with Chris Herring to talk some more basketball, talk some more about the league in general, and talk some more about the New York Knicks on the Free For All.
That was Chris Herring on part one of our conversation. Join us for part two on the Free For All.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.